Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, 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 it's Lane Keys, episode 132. Real talk, as always, fight talk, as always, possibly some sports talk, because there's definitely something to be said in that universe as of tonight. For all the listeners, I'm from New England. I'm actually from Boston, but of course, Boston, the epicenter of New England, of course. And it, Tom Brady basically, announced that he'll be a free agent pretty soon. You know, he's pretty much done with the New England Patriots. So, that's a huge thing, that huge development, since the last time we've done a show, and that's really going to impact a lot for us for the fans out in Boston and somebody like myself. Yeah, I've been watching, Tom Brady Tom Brady is really the only quarterback I've known on the Patriots. I mean, I'm 23 years old, so it's pretty much been Tom Brady season, since I was old enough to, understand football. And I want to say he started with the Patriots. I want to say 2001 was the first year, or maybe it was, I want to say it was 2001 was the first year that he, and I want to say we won the Super Bowl that year. So, and then we won, I want to say 2003 and 2004. So we had three, we went to three Super Bowls in Brady's first 5 years as a starting quarterback. And, it came out a little bit after that he's going to be going to, where is he going? He's going to the Tampa Bay Bucks. He's going to the Buccaneers. Honestly, I really don't know that much about football. I mean, about the NFL in particular, to know really what that team over there is looking like. So I wouldn't know who he's going to be playing with or anything like that. I really don't know players like that in the NFL. But, so I have no idea how that's going to be. Apparently, they have a good team from what I've been hearing. So, I mean, we'll see how it goes. I'm not, I really don't think him being over there is really going to change that much. I mean, for me, I can't see myself at this time going ahead and becoming a Bucks fan or anything like that because he's over there. Probably a good amount of people probably will. And that's understandable. I mean, there's people that, fans of LeBron and kind of follow LeBron to every team that he's gone to. And he's been on, three or four teams, different teams at this point. So, and that's fine. But, I guess it's kind of a different situation for Brady. It's kind of hard to really compare Brady to LeBron, to be honest. I mean, so I guess that me even making that example wasn't really that great of an example, but I guess just in the respect to fans kind of following a particular player to different teams, I guess you can compare them in that sense. But at the same time, LeBron's also gone from team to team multiple times. And like I said, he's moved three or four times, and this is only Brady's first time. So I guess in that regard, it's really not comparable. But I mean, I think you can already tell what I'm talking about here, so I'll just go ahead and ask you how you feel about it. I mean, Tom Brady announced that he's going to be leaving he already did leave the Patriots. He'll be and he went ahead and signed with Tampa. So how do you feel about that? I mean, I know it's not like I'm sure it doesn't really move you, but I'm sure you still got some thoughts on it. As a football fan,
actually, I was shocked that it was the Bucks. I was thinking it would be either Tennessee or the Chargers. But then when Tennessee signed Ryan Tannehill, when they signed Tannehill, I was like, okay, look like Brady going to the Chargers. But then when they said he was going to Tampa Bay, I was wow. I was like, man. But I just think, me personally, I think you're going to find out who really are New England Patriots fans now. Because I think if they do go with Jarrett Stidham, they're going to at least be 8-8 next year, maybe 7-9. You start a second-year quarterback. We lost a lot of key defensive guys to free agency already. And, you know, you really haven't improved on the offensive side that much. So I think it's going to be a struggle if they don't get a veteran quarterback. But I think it's going to be a struggle anyway, because I think Buffalo is actually really good. I think Miami showed towards the end of last year that they're actually building something really good. And the quarterback, the Jets, their quarterback missed 3 weeks last year due to mono. So you got to take in consideration that, you know, that they're going to be a little bit more competitive this year. But I think that Brady is either going to end up one of two ways. What's been said about him is true, that he's slowly falling off a cliff, or you're going to see that he needed a better supporting cast around him. So I'm actually looking forward to it, man. You know, my two sons are Patriots fans, and I think their fanhood is going to be tested next football season. So we'll see, man. But you know what they say, man, all good things come to an end. So I think it was either going to come to an end with Belichick either retiring or stepping down, or it's going to come to an end with Tom Brady leaving. And Brady left, so we'll see whether or not it's a real dynasty.
You know, I think one thing, too, is that it was the timing was so crazy because, you know, when I was at work and my manager was like, wow, like she kind of like got loud all of a sudden. It was like, Tom Brady left the Patriots, and I was like, no way. Like, I didn't believe it, but anywho, the timing was so crazy because we're in the midst of this coronavirus thing, and it's like pretty much a global pandemic at this point, definitely like a national emergency, you know, for the United States, and a global pandemic, you know, because it's affecting, you know, it's affected multiple countries. But, yeah, anyways, we're in this situation, and, you know, it was also like the weather was really dreary that day out here in Boston, and it was just like, and then Tom Brady announces he's leaving. It just seemed like the timing was so bad. I mean, like, they say there's never really a good time, like, when you're going to walk away from something, because then when you try to think about when the perfect time might be, it always seems like something comes in front of it, and you're like, oh, wait, no, maybe I shouldn't do it now because of this. And then when you say, oh, I'll do it at this point, you go and you wait till that point, and then there's another thing that seems like it's a roadblock in front of you making that big decision. It's kind of like if you're going to give you 2 weeks at a job or something like that. I've had that feeling many times when I was, you know, about to getting ready to leave a job, and it just seems like there's never really a perfect time to just, like, make that big step. You kind of just got to, like, bite the bullet and just do it. But, you know, I feel like that's probably what happened with Tom Brady. He probably was thinking about it, you know, and he was, you know, on that edge for a while. And he just didn't know when, you know, I mean, after the season ended, when they were, you know, when we got bounced in the first round of the playoffs, I'm sure that, you know, got him thinking, you know, right there. And then, you know, after with all that time in between, it probably, I would think that it was a lot of that, just not knowing. I mean, I'm sure he was, like, you know, going through negotiations with teams, but also just not knowing when was the right time for him to make that big announcement, because knowing that, you know, it's the fan base. It's not just the business move. It's also, it's, you know, with me, I'm connecting it in another way. I'm thinking of it as he's not just addressing it as a business move. It's addressing his fan base. I'm sure he had to think about that, and he probably thought, when was the right time that I could do this? Because when I break this to people, it's gonna hit a lot of people hard. So, yeah. But anyways, I mean, I'm sure it'll be a couple. I mean, I shouldn't say I'm sure, because I really don't know football that well enough to say I'm sure. But I anticipate that we'll probably have, you know, some rough years, a couple rough seasons at least. You know, not having that key component, you know, that he was. And probably have, you know, I anticipate some kind of rebuilding years to come in the next couple of years, and this, you know, upcoming season included. But it's all good though, because at the same time, I mean, I can't really compare it to like the big three that we had on the Boston Celtics. You know, when KG, Pearson, and Ray Allen, no, and Rondo, but then they also had Ray Allen for a minute after that too. But, you know, after they left, it kind of felt like that with the Celtics for a while. And we went into and this isn't even that great of a comparison, but I'm still making it because I don't care, because I'm just trying to point out the fact that that was a dark time, because Boston was on such a high, you know what I mean? Boston was on such a high with the big three. And then once all those guys kind of split and Garnett and Paul Pierce made that deal to go to, I think it was the Brooklyn Nets, which actually helped us so much in the long run. I feel like those guys like planned that out strategically of how they could actually help the Celtics in the long run, because it worked out so well, because we end up getting all those draft picks, which end up basically rebuilding the Celtics into like the, you know, the team they are now. But aside from it, is that Boston was on such a high with the big three, and we won the championship. After that, there was a lot of tough years with the Celtics in that rebuilding stage. And that took a long time for the Celtics to even get to the point where they are now with the, you know, with the 2019 Celtics and even the 2018 Celtics and the Celtics, you know, as of right now. That took like 10 years to rebuild that team. I mean, after the big three, I can't think off the top of my head what year the big three was officially had left Boston. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but after that, I want to say it was 2011 or 2010 or 2011. I want to say it was 2011, maybe 2012 at the latest, that all those guys were gone from Boston at that point. Because I want to say Ray Allen was around for a while too, but then he went to the Heat. I want to say he went to the Heat. I want to say it was 2010. Yeah, I want to say it was 2010. The big three broke up, and then they had, LeBron and Chris Bosh and D Wade were all playing in Miami. Because I want to say that was 2010. So yeah, but it still took like 9, 8, 9, 10 years to rebuild the Boston Celtics, and now we're finally back at a point. But at the same time, though, we still were all fans. I still rocked my Celtics gear on a regular basis. And I still rock my Celtics gear. Even though they're not playing right now, I still wear my Celtics gear out in public when I do go places. And I wear it on a regular basis. I wear all my New England sports gear. I even rock my Bruins gear, and I don't even really watch hockey. Like, regardless of how if they're a bad team at the moment or they're a good team, I still rock my Bruins gear. It has really nothing. Like, I always represent my teams regardless. I still wear my I got a Patriots beanie that I wear in the wintertime. I'll still wear it if they're good or if they're not having a good season, or they are having a good season. And I'll probably still, you know, tune into the games at the same rate that I really tune into the games. I mean, at least for me, I don't think it really changes. I still support. I know a lot of people will probably hop off the bandwagon, but I mean, I don't really consider myself that I was ever one of those people. I support my Boston teams no matter what. I mean, I don't really watch baseball, so you probably won't see me, you know, doing any of that. I really don't care none for baseball. But, you know, as for anything else, especially the Celtics, I mean, I stayed on with the Celtics through all those years, even when they had some okay guys. I knew, you know, some of who the okay guys were. I remember I used to bring my dad to the Celtics games. We used to buy his tickets and we used to go to the games. And he would, you know, I'd tell him about some of the guys we had. Even when we didn't, we had okay guys. We had an okay starting five. I still knew a little bit about the okay starting five. And I would, you know, I was still interested in that and kind of like the development of some of those guys, you know, whether they stuck around or not. But anyways, I know I kind of went on a rant there, but I just had to talk about my Boston sports for a minute because I know Lee's probably about to kill me right now with this rebuttal. So I just had to get that off.
No, actually I'm not, man. I just think that, you know, man, it's like I said, you're going to find out who the real fans are. You know, I think a lot of people have been saying that Tom Brady has been responsible for the six Super Bowls, and you got people saying that Belichick is responsible for the six Super Bowls. So, basically, you're going to see what happens as far as the fan base is concerned. But my whole thing is this. Belichick had a plan in place with Jimmy Garoppolo. And Tom Brady felt threatened by Jimmy Garoppolo that he went to Mr. Kraft and asked Mr. Kraft to have Belichick trade Jimmy Garoppolo. If they would have kept Garoppolo, they would have had a fallback plan. And they probably would have been business as usual. But Brady felt threatened, and now we just got to see what happens. You know, in football, it's a lot faster to go from losing to winning because all you need is a quarterback and you fill in some holes. Basketball, when you are basically your team is built around three players and you lose all three of them players or you trade them away, then basically you have to hope and pray. Players you draft pan out. You got to pray that you can get free agents. That's why it takes longer in basketball to build a winner than it does in football. Because if you look at the Miami Heat after LeBron left, what did they do? They still had Wade and Bosh, but they didn't do anything. They wasn't winning. So, you know, and then Bosh got sick, so this just became a D-Wade show. But, you know, football is going to be interesting, man. I guess in Boston, it's going to be the chase for the chip. Who going to get it faster, Brady or Belichick?
Well, I mean, I guess we'll have to see. I don't know what I haven't heard anything about Belichick. I don't know what's his status in the grand scheme of things, if he was planning to stick around or if he was going to be, you know, moving to a coach another team or he was going
to. He has no choice but to stick around now. He has no choice now because basically if he was the lead now, it would be like Tom Brady was the reason why he was successful. So now he has to stick around to prove that it was all about him and his system. So, yeah, he ain't going nowhere. It's pride now.
Yeah, so he kind of has to go ahead and prove that he can operate and rebuild a team with what he has.
Exactly.
And still be a great coach.
Yep. So he can't leave.
No,
so what we had
thinking,
tonight?
Like, you know, see, I'm just like typing something out right now, and what I'm just thinking to myself, let me just finish. Okay, so what I'm just thinking to myself is how much could really. What I'm just thinking to myself is how much more worse could things actually get? I mean, it's a laughing matter for me. It's okay, but it's just like funny to just state because And you could probably go ahead and read that right there up on the screen. But, you know, Brady left the Patriots. You know, the coronavirus is killing people everywhere. You know, taking lives everywhere. I should have said that in a better way. That sounded really, like, harsh. It's taking lives everywhere. It actually just the first death in my state, the first death from the coronavirus in Massachusetts was earlier today. So we've had our first official death from the coronavirus. I actually knew the person, too. I knew him kind of like personally, which is pretty crazy. But also at the same time as, like, both of those, you know, the UFC is pretty much on at a standstill for, like, the next month because they were struggling to keep this the event that's supposed to happen tomorrow, which is going to be, I think, UFC London. They were struggling to keep that card together, you know, the Woodley Edwards card, and then that fell apart. They tried to move it to the U.S., and that couldn't that fell apart too. So then they just went ahead and said all the UFC events for the next 3 to 4 weeks. I think we're pretty sure it's the next three. It's the next 3 weeks of events. It's not the next,
yeah, the next
4 weeks
events.
Of events are all canceled, and they pretty much canceled all UFC up until the Khabib Ferguson card, which I want to say is in mid-April. And if you're a UFC fan, especially somebody who's been waiting for the Khabib Ferguson card and has seen it fall through, I think, 4 times now and has been disappointed every time, you're probably speculating at this point, like I am, that the Khabib Ferguson fight for the now 5th time could be canceled again because of the coronavirus. And I feel like that is a very real possibility that fight does not happen because of everything that's going on, which is understandable because, you know, the state of California just, like, issued a, I forget what they called it, but they don't want people to leave their houses anymore in California. And, you know, Ferguson trains out in California. I think Khabib trains out in California too. So, I don't know, man. I mean, I heard Khabib's gym isn't even open, and he's the only one training there. He trains there a couple hours a day. He's the only one allowed in the gym. So I don't know if that's because the gym is closed due to the virus or the gym is closed because he's preparing for a fight. And if it were the latter, then that's kind of a good sign because it tells me that Khabib is still training as if he's going to be fighting, which would tell me that behind the scenes, you know, if they're still prepping for a fight, then they've been told that the fight is still on. So that's good. But I don't know, man. What do you think? You think the fight will happen? Khabib Ferguson? You know, it's about a month away.
Man, I'm at the point now where I wish the fight will happen, but I think for the safety of what's going on in the world, that Dana needs to be smart about this and do the right thing. If the right thing is postponing the fight, then postpone the fight. But for everything I done read this week, he is hell-bent on having this fight. So I'm thinking that they're going to move the fight probably to probably Saudi Arabia or Qatar. So they can have a fight there. It's just so tough, man, because, you know, you want to be a human right now, but at the same time, as a human, you want some form of normalcy in your life. And with no live sports, it's just tough. And, man, I want the fight to happen, but at the same time, I want them to be smart about it. Don't put the fighters in jeopardy. Don't put other people in jeopardy. You know, be smart. It's just a tough position that the UFC is in. I know what Dana wants to do. He wants to be the only live sports show happening right now because it will bring so many eyes to the UFC because we don't have football. We don't have March Madness. The NBA is on chill. Baseball is on chill. So it's like he could be the only show in town. And I understand the rationale behind what he want to do, but everything in me tells me that this fight shouldn't happen, but it's going. But the fight is going to happen.
You're saying, okay, so your final say is that you're saying everything is telling you it shouldn't happen, but you think it will happen.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to be honest. I totally agree with the notion of like them, of Dana White playing it safe and looking out for the fighter's safety and things like that. But, you know, like as for the whole card, I don't know how I feel about the whole card taking place. Like, but I am very selfish of the idea of that particular fight taking place. And I don't think that one fight taking place would be that much. I mean, it would be a risk, but I don't think it'd be as much of a risk as the entire card of fighters, you know, performing. So, and I don't know if the UFC would ever go, you know, move to try to just do Khabib Ferguson fight at like a, you know, non-disclosed location and nothing and no other fight. I mean, maybe he would do it. I mean, I'm just kind of selfish about that fight happening because I just want to see it so bad. And I know that if Khabib doesn't fight during the summer, we know that. So if the fight does not happen now, I feel like this situation is going to spill into the summer anyways. I don't think we're going to get done with this situation really anytime soon. I feel like this could be like a few more months. You know, that's just that's my vision for how it will go. I don't really know. But just by the way things are panning out right now, I feel like this is going to spill into the summer. And Khabib then doesn't fight during the summer. And then at that point, if you wanted to see it, the earliest that you would probably see it would be probably like October. Yeah, I'd say probably like October 20. Yeah, so probably October 2020 probably be the earliest that we would be able to see the fight after that, and even then is not. It could even spill into 2021 at that point because I don't even know, because the way this UFC tends to, they like to plan fights out, and Dana White likes to have the next couple of events like in his mind already of like how it's going to go and what the main events are. So there might not even be enough time, and who knows what the timeline with everything going on, how and everything's going to pan out. So I have no idea, but I feel like if it doesn't, I just have a bad feeling that if it doesn't happen, if the fight doesn't happen, you know, in a couple of weeks, then we might not even see it this year. And then that the thought of not even seeing it until next year is just devastating because I just want to see it so bad, man. And I'm being selfish with wanting to see it so bad, but I'm just trying to be honest with my true thoughts on it. And I definitely want the UFC to be safe. I wouldn't want them to do the whole card and have that many fighters, you know, compete and be in contact with each other. But that one fight I definitely want to see, and I would want it to happen. But if it doesn't, then I understand. I just think that if it doesn't happen, we might not even see it in 2020.
Yeah, I just think there's just too much stuff in play right now. And if the UFC could somehow pull it off, my hats will go off to Dana. But it's just too much stuff going on where it's the cards are stacked against them. There's too many people saying that it shouldn't happen. So, and I think Ramadan is in August. So if Ramadan is in August, you know Khabib definitely not fighting in August. So if they was to push it back, it was scheduled to take place in April. What would they push it back to? June? Maybe July? Because August is off the table. I know August and September are probably off the table. Now, when did I get to Qatar? I got to Qatar in September. So I think Ramadan is, depending on the schedule, is either August or September. So, yeah, I can see August and September being off to being a no-go. So, I'm with you. I really want to see the fight. I really, really want to see the fight because it is the most cursed fight in UFC history. And it will determine who is the true champion, being that Tony never lost, and he did win the belt. And I really, really, really want to see this fight. So I think we just got to cross our fingers, man, and hope for the best. Anything outside of that? Man, it's just tough, man, because, you know, as fans, you know, we being fans right now. But as humans, we understand what's going on in the world. So, like I said, I think the fight shouldn't happen, but I think the fight is going to happen.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a good point that you made. We're just being fans right now, which is actually, that's exactly what's happening, and that's what I was saying before. And it's just me being, you know, as a fan, just wanting, just being selfish in that way that I'm just dying to see the fight. And, you know, we understand that it might not be the best idea, but we're just really dying to see it. And, you know, we're dying to see the fight, and I just think that it man, who knows?
It's tough,
because
man.
Because, what do you say?
It's tough because you don't want to seem like you're insensitive to what's going on in the world, but at the same time, yo, the UFC is the basis of our show. And do you know how much we could talk about leading up to that fight? You know, it's just a lot. And for people that don't know, man, this fight has been scheduled 5 or 6 times, and each time it's been called off due to injury or something fluky. So it's like now that we here, we want the fight to happen.
And it's like we've came so close.
Yeah. It's like we almost
had
the finish line.
We've been a week away from the fight and lost it before.
Yep. Actually, we was a Friday night. What was it, Thursday? Then Tony get hurt on like a Thursday when he tore his knee up. It was either Thursday or Friday right before the fight.
Was that the last one when Kenta stepped in?
Yep. Cause he tore his knee up doing some media stuff for the UFC.
And they were actually trying to get Anthony Pettis for that fight before they got Iaquinta.
Because I was kind of mad that the UFC did what they did to Tony by stripping him of the belt. When he out here doing something for the company that he shouldn't have probably been doing, and then y'all strip him of the belt, and you have Khabib fight for this belt against Iaquinta when we all know that our Kenta shouldn't have been in that position.
I came to look good, though. He did have a he impressed me with his performance versus Khabib.
Let me see. I ain't gonna say he looked good. He didn't. He had moments where some people thought he wouldn't even have a moment. He did have moments in the fight, and I think if he could have found a way to not get dominated on the mat, he would have probably had a he would definitely had a chance of winning, because his striking definitely gave Khabib problems. But everybody striking gives Khabib problems.
Now, I have another thing to run by you. What I want to say is...
What's that?
I heard a rumor that they're trying to make your boy Justin Gaethje versus Conor McGregor for July 11th.
Actually, that's not a rumor. That's actually a fact. And actually,
is that a fact?
The person that actually that's driving this actual bandwagon for this fight is actually Khabib said that Conor shouldn't get a title shot unless he can get through Justin Gaethje. So, then the UFC is actually, I can't believe they're doing this, but they're actually doing it. But at the same time, I think what they're basically doing is making this a title eliminator so that if, I got to say it. What they're doing is trying to keep Conor in the title picture, even though he really don't deserve it. They're trying to keep him in a title pitch. So basically, with Khabib saying that the only way he will rematch Conor for the belt is if he could get past Gaethje. So the UFC, they have to get him Gaethje to justify that if they put him in a title fight against Khabib, that he earned it instead of just putting him back in there. So it's kind of like, Khabib is actually playing with Conor a little bit by making him accept this fight. But at the same time, it's like the UFC wasn't just going to put Conor, you know, they probably would have. So I'm not going to say the UFC wouldn't have. They probably would have. But this get them more, this makes them more, more warranted. If he was to beat Gaethje, to have him in a rematch with Khabib.
Now, my thing is, the only source that I really, like, put a lot of, you know, the only source that I, that like has mentioned the fight for that date that I, like, put some credibility, that I kind of, like, put some faith in is Owen Roddy. He said that but he didn't say the fight was going to happen. He just said, If there were, I think Ariel Helwani asked him, like, what fight would you want to see next? And he said, I'd want to see Gaethje and McGregor on for the July 11th card, which could just be very, you know, subliminal to the fact that the fight's already in the works. But I haven't seen any really, I haven't seen any official sources like, you know, any of the other ESPN reporters come out and say that fight was in the works. Other than that, other than Owen Roddy saying that he'd want to see that fight, I've only seen, like, a lot of people speculating and saying that fight is in the works, but just, like, fans, not anybody that's, like, you know, a journalist or anything like that.
But there's been a lot of I want to make sure I use the right word. A lot of back channels talk that Khabib has definitely said this about Conor, that he shouldn't just get a rematch unless he beats Gaethje. So whether or not that happens, we'll see. But I just think the UFC is trying to keep Khabib kind of happy, and this is one way of doing it.
And what I'm just trying to understand is, no, I'm not saying that, you know, Gaethje can't go in there and absolutely spock McGregor unconscious, because he can. That's very much a possibility. I just don't understand why every time that Khabib's manager talks about this fight, he makes it seem like he props up the fight as if it's going to be like this huge roadblock that like is going to sidetrack McGregor, and like as if it's like, oh, let me put this guy here because he can't beat, we know he can't beat this guy, and we don't really, it almost seems like he doesn't really want to see the rematch. So let me put this guy here, somebody that, you know, he doesn't have a chance against this guy. You know, this guy's on a three win streak, all knockouts. McGregor can't beat this guy. Like, I just don't understand why that seems that's their like stance on it. It almost seems like Khabib went from a place where he was just not that long ago saying that the only way he would give McGregor a rematch is if he won 10 fights in a row. And I believed him when he said that, because I thought that, because when you say that, you're pretty much saying that, like, McGregor only has, I think 11, maybe 12 fights in the UFC. So to say that he has to go on a 10 win streak is basically saying, I'm never going to fight him again. Not saying that he can't go on a 10 win streak, but just saying that McGregor's not going to do 10 fights to get a rematch with Khabib. Like, that's just not going to happen. Honestly, I'd be surprised if he does 10 more fights in his career. Even though I'd like to see him do 10 more fights, I'd honestly be surprised if he does 10 more fights, because at the rate that he's been fighting lately, it just doesn't seem like it doesn't seem like he would do 10 more fights in the UFC, at least. I don't know what might happen. He's so young, but I can't imagine who he would fight in 10 more fights. I just can't imagine. But it went from saying he has to win 10 fights in a row to now saying he only has to beat Gaethje. It almost seems like they think it's not doable. Like, what happened? 10 fights in a row, now it's win one fight, and now we can fight again. Why does it seem like the stance has changed so drastically? 10 fights, and now it's one fight. And it's a guy who that McGregor can beat. It's not like this is like an impossible feat. It's like if he would have – honestly, I feel like if McGregor were to fight like Charles Oliveira, that would be like, if Khabib was like, okay, McGregor has to beat Charles Oliveira to fight me, or McGregor has to beat like Damian Maia to fight me, I feel like either one of those two fights I would be questioning more than Gaethje, because of the styles, because Gaethje's going to stand there and he's not a punching bag like he used to be, but he's going to stand there and bang, and he's going to try to outstrike McGregor. That's the difference. Those other guys we know can submit McGregor, and he might not be able to deal with what they bring to the table. So that's why I would be more scared for McGregor in those two fights than I would be versus Gaethje. So I don't really understand why it's being brought to the table as if it's like this impossible feat to beat Gaethje. I don't think he's even that good. He's on a little win streak, but the guys he beat aren't even that good. He's not knocking out guys that are really anything. Hold on, there's a caller on the line too, and I feel like this is a good time to get them on the call, so we're just going to go ahead and get them on the call right now. I got to ask and see what they think about this. Yo.
Hey, how's it going?
This Evan?
Yeah, what's up?
I recognize your voice, brother.
How we doing?
What's up, Evan?
I'm doing great. How you holding up there? Staying safe?
Good,
crazy
good.
Times?
I'm enjoying the extra time to play video games, I must say.
I'm with you, man. I got my Xbox on right now. I'm ready to go.
Exactly.
You play Xbox or PS4? You a PlayStation guy?
I got both.
Oh, okay. We'll have to revisit this topic on a future show.
Definitely.
But did you happen to hear what we were just talking about?
A little bit. Mainly, it was obviously the whole Conor Khabib, that whole thing.
So what I'm just trying to, what I was leaving off with is I just don't understand, because what I was saying to Lee was I didn't see any really official reports about, because I've been seeing a lot of speculation that they're trying to get H.E. McGregor for July 11th. I said to Lee, I haven't seen really any official reports that fight is going to happen, just kind of fans speculating. But it's interesting to me. But then what Lee had said was how Khabib has kind of been like Khabib has been somebody who has kind of created a lot of speculation that the fight is going to happen, because he came out and said that he would fight McGregor, he would rematch McGregor but McGregor has to beat Justin Gaethje first before he would give him a rematch. So at that point, what I had just said was, I don't understand why it seems like when Ali Abdelaziz, every time he talks about this and he says this, he makes it seem like, now I know Justin Gaethje is extremely dangerous, and I said this before I started talking, that it's very much a possibility that McGregor could fight Gaethje and get absolutely sparked unconscious. That's very much a possibility. I understand. It is a dangerous fight because Gaethje's on a very crazy crazy run right now. I'm not – but I do think it's a winnable fight. So I just don't understand why it's being made to seem like – because Khabib went from saying McGregor needs to win 10 fights in a row for me to fight him again, which is basically the same as saying that I'm never going to fight him again. He went from that to now saying he just needs to beat one guy and I'll fight him again. And it's a guy that I feel like is very beatable in general. Mm-hmm. I don't think Gaethje is that this like impossible feat to beat him. I think he is very beatable. He's on a win streak, but he is very beatable. So what do you think about that?
I agree. Gaethje is obviously beatable, and he's been beaten by arguably two of the top lightweights in the world, and Dustin Poirier and Eddie Alvarez. I think the problem, like the whole what you were saying with how Khabib went from the 10, win 10 fights in a row to you just have to beat Gaethje, that's just because Ali, is the manager for both of them. So he's got to, he's got to work his magic for the both of them to kind of, to get their shine, which is very weird, Gaethje being a top contender and Khabib being the champion. I wonder how that really factors into the decision making for, for a manager and for the UFC. Gaethje could pose serious problems for Conor. Obviously, the immediate fast paced pressure that he offers, leg kicks are something that Conor really has never had to deal with. Saw in the Eddie fight that he kind of didn't like that right in the start, but then Eddie went away from it. What you guys were saying before, it's like been rumored, but then it's also been said. I don't know. I've been hearing and seeing the same thing. It's been confirmed. It's not been confirmed. I don't know. All I know is I do hope at some point we get this fight going.
Me? I think Khabib is saying this because he thinks he could beat Conor again. His thing is, I think he's confident that he could beat him again. Okay, so you want to get in with me again. Okay, you do this and out, and you do this, you go in and beat Gaethje, and I'll show the world that I'll beat you even worse the next time. So I think there's a little bit of cockiness coming from Khabib, that he could beat Conor. But at the same time, it's like the thing with Gaethje being managed by the same manager, it does make sense. But if Gaethje wins, Do they make the Gaethje versus Khabib fight? Because that's two of these guys going against each other.
That is a tough one. That's a tough answer right there.
Yeah, so it's like, to me, if I was Gaethje, I would feel like, yo, y'all think I'm going to go in here and lose so that, you know, that y'all probably can, that we don't have to get in here and bang. So I think that's one way Gaethje should look at it.
I agree.
Because it seems like they're setting him up to go out here to lose to Conor, because stylistically he is tailor-made for Conor if he doesn't wrestle. And as of late, we all know that he has forgotten that part of his game.
Man, you know Gaethje is not going to wrestle. We have not seen him even try to wrestle in any fight. I had not seen anything of his wrestling. I don't even believe that he even wrestles at this point. And I was also surprised about that in a similar way with Yoel Romero versus Adesanya, that he didn't try to wrestle. And apparently he when he trains, he does a ton of wrestling. When he goes in there, we never see him wrestle. So I don't understand that with Romero, the same as I don't understand that with Justin Gaethje. These guys apparently are great wrestlers, but they never use it when they fight in the UFC. I don't understand that concept of having a big advantage to use and not have to always let your hands go and you can wrestle and you don't utilize it. I don't understand that strategy.
And it's a possibility of you taking less punishment. When you wrestle, you really don't take a lot of punishment. Whereas in a stand-up, you can get kicked, you can get knee, you can get caught in the clinch, you get punched. When you wrestle and you on top of somebody, normally the only thing they probably can do is maybe throw a punch or two, but what they main purpose is get back to their feet. They're not thinking about throwing strikes when they're on the bottom. They're thinking about getting back to their feet. So I don't understand it either, Keys. That's one of my frustrations with John Jones right now, is he refuses to wrestle now. He talks a good game about wrestling, but when he get in the octagon, it seems like it's a forgotten part of his game.
And I think the thing is, too, with John Jones is that if he was to mix in the wrestling with his strikes, I think his strikes would be so much more effective, because guys don't really know what's coming next from him. And as where right now it's just him standing in front of guys and he's just kind of doing a lot of, like, defensive striking and kind of just, like, trying to make a lot of reads on Thiago Santos.
No, he's trying to beat guys at their own game. That's the stupidest thing ever. That's like going into
a heavyweight fight
with Mike Tyson and saying, yeah, I'm going to sit here and trade blows with Mike Tyson. No, you're not. You're going to jab and move. You're not going to stand in front of Mike Tyson and let him right hook you to the body 3 times in a row to hit you with an uppercut. Because guess what? The show is over.
Well,
that's ridiculous.
So, I've heard that. So, McGregor-Gaethje could happen July 11th. I also heard about Usman versus Masvidal for July 11th. Now, if those two fights were to both happen on the same card, that would be absolutely unbelievable for the UFC. To whichever way you want to go, I mean, I figure you'd have Usman Masvidal. I mean, I don't know what they would want to do versus, you know, with main event versus co-main event. I'm sure they'd put Gaethje and McGregor in the main event, and then you'd have Usman Masvidal in the co-main event. Or they might even just do those as two separate events, because they're both, like, really big fights, and Usman Masvidal is also a title fight, so I guess it'd be kind of odd to have a title fight as a co-main and then have a non-title fight as the main event. So, but I did hear about both those fights for the same date.
Is that International Fight Week?
I'm assuming it is, because it's usually that week every year, that first or second week of July.
I don't think Conor will ever sign off as being a co-main event. That's just my personal opinion. I don't think he will ever sign off being a co-main event, but I would rather see Usman versus Masvidal as the main event, and that and if that was to happen, because that's for a belt. And I think that fight deserves to be top billing over Conor versus Usman. That's just my personal opinion.
Now I'm going to ask you this. Evan.
Yep.
If Gaethje and McGregor, I'm going to ask you about both fights.
Mm-hmm.
If both of those fights were to happen on the same card, let's just say, who would you have in both of those fights?
So Gaethje, McGregor, and Usman Masvidal?
Yep.
I think, personally, I feel like Usman Masvidal isn't as, like, I know marketing-wise and promotion-wise, it's an exciting fight because of what Masvidal is doing, but, you know, watching him in, like, the Diaz fight clearly slowed down towards, like, you know, the late rounds. But also, you know, can Usman take the damage that Nate Diaz took in those early rounds? So I don't know. I think I'm going to take Usman for that one. And then Conor Gaethje.
You really thought about that, huh?
I know Gaethje can offer like trouble, but I think, I mean, it also depends, because I know Connor or John Kavanaugh said something about they want Gaethje, but they want him at 170. Like, that's the thing now. You know, fighting at 155 instead, you just fight at 170, but you get a lightweight ranking for fighting at welterweight. But yeah,
I'm kind of with you. I think Usman would possibly. I think he will possibly beat Masvidal if it was to go to a decision. But I'm kind of with you. Can he really keep that pace that Masvidal fights at? Could he survive taking two or three punches in a row at the way Masvidal can strike? If he could survive that, I would definitely go with Usman. But if you was to make me pick today, I would say Masvidal would win probably via a second-round knockout, because I just don't think Usman can keep that pace. Well, actually, he's kept pace with Colby, though. But Colby didn't fight at his normal pace to me in that fight.
Cut you off. Colby made a claim of food poisoning, so just put that into your thoughts. It could be bullshit, but he seemed genuine.
What did he say?
Colby said he had food poisoning by the UFC PI leading up to that fight, and apparently he was supposed to pull out, but his coaches said he couldn't, so he just toughed it up, and that's why his cardio wasn't the same.
Well, he didn't look the same. So, you know, Ben, with that being said, I'm normally not a Colby Covington fan, but I know that his pace didn't look the same, that he didn't come out the way that he came out against in his last two, three fights, where he was just pushing the pace. But I have to look at the guys he fought when he was pushing the pace. It was Robbie Lawler. It was it RDA.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Damian Maia. Guys that really don't fight at the fastest pace in the world.
Yeah, I mean, Kobe and Usman both took a lot. And this is kind of like going. This is kind of taking another angle with it. Kobe and Usman both took so many shots in that fight. My question is, would Usman be able to trade like that with Masvidal?
No.
I would say no. I would say no. I think he would get dropped if he were to trade like that with Masvidal. Masvidal is too—he's too quick, and he's too—the way he attacks is different than what Usman and Kobe were doing. Usman and Kobe were like, it really looked a lot like a boxing match to me. That was very much what that looked like to me. They were a lot more. You know, they were picking their shots a bit more. I feel like Masvidal would just kind of go, he would just attack Usman at, like, all angles. And I just feel like he would overwhelm him if they were to just, like, stand in front of each other. But at the same time, I think if Usman were to take Masvidal down the stretch, I think Usman would win in big fashion. If he were to be able to drag him into, like, the fourth or fifth round, get him into the championship rounds, I think Usman wins down the stretch either by decision, because I think he would win both the fourth and fifth round, because I think Masvidal would be gassed out in the fourth round. He would be completely gassed out, because I think he would try to, in the opening rounds, I think he would be trying so hard to put Usman away, because that's just kind of been his style in his past couple of fights, is just like putting guys away. And then that in the fourth and the fifth round, he just wouldn't have enough. And Usman's gas tank is unbelievable. So Usman to me didn't even look tired at any point versus Covington. I feel like he in the fifth round, he looked like he could have went, you know, another couple of rounds after that. And I really didn't think that he looked gassed at any point. I mean, the fight was at the pace it was at, and it kind of just kept the same pace throughout from the way that I remember it. And Usman didn't look to be, you know, he didn't look to be, you know, worn out in the fifth round. He looked like he could have went, you know, eight rounds. So, you know, I think he would beat him if he took him down the stretch. And Usman could possibly even finish Masvidal if he took him down the stretch. I don't know if it would be by decision or by finish, but I think either one of those is possible for Usman to win if he were to get him into the fourth or fifth round. But if Usman were to just, like, stand in front of Masvidal in the first three rounds and not try to use his wrestling to his advantage and put his weight on Masvidal in the first couple of rounds, I think Masvidal would have a big chance to just completely overwhelm him with strikes and put him away within the first three rounds.
Yeah, I think we all agree on that. But another thing I think that we're doing that we're giving Usman his props, but are we overhyping Masvidal? Because Usman really has looked good. He looked good against Tyron Woodley, and he looked good against Colby Covington.
And to credit that, I mean, and those are like the two best guys at welterweight, and he pretty much looked unbelievable versus both of them. He looks very good, and if you look to who Nate Diaz has been, you know, who his win streak is, I mean, he fought guys who really aren't. I mean, he beat Nate Diaz, who I really don't think that's, like, a very big win. I mean, Nate Diaz, it is what it is. Nate Diaz is kind of, you know, it's an exciting fight, but I really don't think that was, like, really necessarily a big win. I mean, Nate Diaz isn't a top contender, really, in any division.
But I kind of agree with Evan, though. I think my man was gassing in that fight, though. I think Masvidal was really slowing down, and I think the way he was slowing down would have gave Nate a chance to maybe mount a little comeback.
Well, that's why a lot of people were saying if they wouldn't have stopped the fight and let Nate go into the fourth and fifth round, then the fight probably would have been a different fight. Because Nate Diaz tends to turn it on in the later rounds, tends to come alive. So that's I know a lot of people were upset about that they, you know, stepped in and called the fight because of his eye.
Yeah.
But you know, if you know the we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. I mean, because Masvidal. I mean, I was watching the video and someone was showing the clip of Darren Till dropping Masvidal like early in the first round in their fight, and that even it made me second guess Masvidal even more because I actually didn't even see that fight, so I didn't even know that Till dropped Masvidal until I saw that video, and then that brought it to my attention. I said, "Wow, this guy is looking invincible because of the performances he's been putting on." And I think mostly because of that flying knee on Ben Askren. But Ben Askren went for a takedown immediately. He went to a takedown to a guy that was running at him. I don't know why. I just don't understand that. That whole fight, I don't understand what happened with Ben Askren there. So, and that's a whole other thing for another day. But anywho, I just don't think Masvidal is this invincible fighter that he's been made to seem as. I think he is another beatable fighter. It's just going to take another game opponent to actually take him out, not these guys that he's been fighting.
Yeah, but the only questionable fight you can say that he had is against who? What, Nate Diaz? That's the only questionable fight you can say that maybe he may have fought a subpar guy. I mean, he went over to England and beat Darren Till, and that's no small feat.
Yeah, I know that, but at the same time, is Darren Till was already broken by my boy T Wood.
I knew you was gonna say that. Oh man, save me, Evan.
I mean, that was a bad.
Woodley took his soul, man. He took Till's soul. He broke that man's pride. Till was not the same fighter after that.
No, he is not.
Oh, man, Jesus. We was having such a good conversation. Such a good conversation. Wow. Wow. I'm sitting here speechless, man.
But it is true, though, because hey, Darren Till looked invincible. They thought Darren Till was invincible in the UFC for a while, too, but the beating that Woodley put on him was just too much, and when he came back on the other side of it, he couldn't get his form back ever since. Well, up until the Gastelum fight, he looked kind of good in the Gastelum fight, but up until then, he really couldn't get his form back for a minute there.
It's true.
Oh, man.
Lee's like, man, it's too late. We already went through all this. Now you're coming in at the last second talk.
All I know is this. I think Edwards was going to put a whooping on Tyron Woodley this weekend if the fight would have stayed. I think Edwards would have tore him up.
Hey, to this day, I still haven't seen Leon Edwards fight. I'm still waiting to see what he does.
It's very. He's got a very patient style, to put it that way.
You saying like
yeah,
Stephen Thompson kind of patient, or are you talking about like?
Nah, Stephen Thompson is a lot more active. Like Leon is just he's like very composed, very
he doesn't rush.
No, he doesn't rush. He literally like only takes the shots he has to. Like he won't just try and like brawl. He's just very very accurate, very smart at such a young age.
If I had to compare him I would compare him to a young John Jones when John was fighting to be the champion, because John fought the same way. He used his elbows as weapons, and Leon Edwards uses his elbows as weapons. He stays out of harm's way. He uses his reach advantage, and he's very, very, very hard to get him out of his game plan. Whatever game plan he comes in the octagon with, he tries to stick to it, and it's a testament to him. But at the same time, sometimes it could be not fun to watch.
Mm. Yeah, like, I remember I watched him fight Cowboy, and I didn't like Edwards at the time. And it just wasn't as exciting as I had hoped to be. And then watching, he had a fight against RDA, and I don't even remember much from the fight. The one fight I remember from him was the Gunnar Nelson fight, and he did very well in that fight.
Yeah, I don't remember the Gunnar Nelson fight, but I do remember the Cowboy fight, and I thought he dominated Cowboy, and he made it look real easy.
Didn't he? Might as well, like, look him up on YouTube at this point.
I would. It's worth it. He, you know, I feel like he's kind of one of those fighters where waiting for that big fight to really showcase his talent, you know, like, he's got such a high skill level and, like, such, like, he's got so many weapons that he doesn't even need to show us all of what he can do. And then in the Woodley fight, that was going to be his breakout moment, but of course.
And that's why I thought he was going to dominate Woodley, especially with him fighting in London, in the UK where he's from. I thought we was going to see a totally different Leon Edwards in this fight. And that's why I'm so bummed that we're not going to see the fight.
Super, super.
I still want to see Till versus Edwards.
That will probably not happen, but, and, you know, chances.
Oh, yeah. Because they're not in the same division anymore. But nowadays, with guys jumping divisions like it's nobody's business, I wouldn't be surprised if someday it does happen.
Exactly.
Because Till could always lose his next fight at 185 and then say, I'm going to drop back down to 170. Or if Leon Edwards became the champ at 170, you know the trend now. You become the champ in the division, and then you're already thinking about moving up to the division above you. So you could always see Edwards move up to 185.
Nah, I don't think he will fare well at 185. I don't think he's built for 185.
How big?
He's 6'2". And he's got a 74-inch reach, not to cut you off. He really isn't that big of a welterweight. I think he's, I would say welterweight is his best, you know. And as he's getting older, cutting to 55 would just be a mistake.
Yeah. I think he will stay right where he at.
Mm-hmm. Quick question, if I can jump in here. I have
go ahead.
I've been thinking about this. So, you know, what's it called? So this weekend's main event got canceled. The Columbus, or I don't know if it was Columbus, but the
Columbus.
It was Francis versus Rosenstrike. Also, Cody Garbrandt pulled out prior to the fight getting canceled. So you got, you know, though, you know, the Woodley Edwards fight got canceled, the Francis Rosenstrike fight got canceled. Who knows you know, Khabib, Tony, if that's going to happen. What do you think the UFC is going to do with all the fights that have been canceled? Do you think they're just going to make this giant mega card as soon as, like, you know, we're clear of this corona thing? Like, are they just going to, like, bombard?
That's actually a really great question, because we were talking about something to that effect earlier, but really not what you said at all. We were saying, just do we think that Khabib Ferguson will happen because they canceled all the events leading up to that fight, but that fight, you know, Dana White's still saying is going to happen. So we were talking about more on the along the lines of that, but you took it another way, which is actually an interesting way, and said, what if they take all those fights and put them on the same card and kind of mesh all those cards together? And that's actually a really good question, and that would actually be epic. That would be epic if they would.
I would say no. I would say they won't make a massive card. I think what they would try to do is they would try to basically have those events in Columbus and those events in Portland. Because I think the one in Columbus was going to actually be on the campus of Ohio State, and it was going to be like the first time they had a fight card on a college campus. So I think they will probably want to do that just for the atmosphere of that. And Portland is such a staple as far as combat sports, especially when it comes to, like, WWE and, you know, the UFC. I think they will want to go there. But you have to do what's good for the fighter also. And I think those fights, they should definitely reschedule, especially Rozenstruik, because he's definitely on such a tear that I definitely want to see him. But if there was a dual massive card, I wouldn't be mad about it. Would they do a Friday night card, then a Saturday card? You know, would they do, you know, well, they would have to do probably a two-night event, because you couldn't have all those fights on in one night. So I would say if they could do a two-night event, that would be awesome. It would be the first time in UFC history that they would pull that off.
And I think that Ngannou Rozenstruik, that fight, I'm like really dying to see too. They definitely got to get that back. You know, I need
to
see that fight.
And honestly,
they got to get that one back together.
They don't need that. That doesn't even need to be a main event. You know, I understand why they were doing that, because Francis hits hard, Biggie Boy hits hard. You know, they're both heavyweights. I get the marketing, but honestly, that's a perfect co-main event. Because I don't like how the UFC stacks the sometimes stacks the cards with, like, three title fights, because I feel like some of the title fights can market on their own, and so I feel like that would be a perfect co-main under a title fight. Like, you could put, like, a I don't know, like, it's just you know, like, maybe like when Zhang Weili, if they ever give her a main event, you know, just give it, have a good co-main event under her.
Hey, man, she did just have a main event, her and Joanna.
That is true. It was the real main event. You're fucking right about that.
What do you mean? Yeah. It was the real main event.
Yeah, because that shit that came on after that was fucking terrible.
I don't know what that was that came on after that.
What was on after it? I don't remember. I think I shut the TV off.
It was a snooze fest.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I lost all memory. I don't recall what it
was.
Yeah,
because Derrick Lewis came out and said that he was happy that now everybody can stop talking about him and Francis fight being the worst fight in UFC history.
Oh, man. He's hilarious.
He wants a rematch with Francis Lewis does.
I saw that.
I don't think the public wants to see it unless it's for a belt. Because after what they pulled the last time, why would we want to see that?
Yeah, that fight was horrible.
Yeah, man, that fight was, oh my God. And it was like everybody was so happy that it was happening.
But I'm just scared that that could happen with Ngannou and Rozenstruik because it's a very similar fight on paper if you just look at it.
I don't think that it will happen because Rozenstruik, his aggressive style, that he's going to sit back and wait. I think he will come forward. I don't think he will wait like Derrick Lewis was doing. I think Rozenstruik will want to come out and show the world that he's for real.
And then now let me ask you guys this. Do you think that Rozenstruik can beat Ngannou?
Yes.
And do you, is, power. Is that, would that if you had to okay, so how about this? This is kind of intense, but if somebody put a gun to your head and said who wins that fight, who would you say?
Rozenstruik, second round knockout.
Evan, what would you say?
Oh no. I'm gonna be that guy. I'm gonna have to go back and watch Rozenstruik's fights, but I think I'd say Francis just because I think Francis is faster, and I think if he uncorks a freaking Overeem uppercut, it's game over.
Yeah, I think I want to say I've seen Rozenstruik when he fought. I want to say he fought Arlovski. I think it was the Arlovski fight when I really was like, okay, like this guy looks good. I think it was Arlovski that he fought, and then he fought. Then he fought Overeem, and I feel like Overeem was dominating him the entire fight. And
he
then
was.
He got caught Yeah, he was dominating him the entire fight. I was so proud and like. I was loving that. Like Overeem was looking so good versus the top guy, and then he got caught like at the very end of the fight. And I was like, "Are you kidding me? Overeem really getting caught in the last like 5 seconds of the fight? That was terrible."
UFC
oh my God,
screwed Overeem on that one though. That was bad, bad. I think that was a bad call. Like I know Overeem's mouth messed up, but like he stumbled, but then he got back up, and I think that was UFC's. Last, you know, saving grace that the ref stopped that fight because if they didn't stop the fight, then that train of freaking of Rozenstruik would have went out the door.
Yep.
Walker.
Yep, I don't have to agree with that. But the thing is though, is that you have to remember that Overeem is a seasoned veteran though. You know he knows. You know he knows the ins and outs of being in the octagon, whereas. Is Ngannou of the season as Overeem? I would say no.
And also, I mean, Overeem don't care if he loses or not. He's in there making almost $1 million to fight, so I got to give a damn.
I think he still wants to win, though, Keith.
Yeah, I'm sure he wants to win, but at the end of the day, if you get beat up, but, you know, if you get beat up for $60,000, and then you get beat up for $750,000, I think it's gonna feel a little bit different after.
it's still an ass whooping.
Yeah, no, I know, but I'm just saying. You can go back to that. Go back to all that. He's gonna be a little bit happier after. But and to just put my two cents in there. If someone had a gun to my head, I would pick Francis over Rozenstruik too, because I think Rozenstruik is gonna be, and I'll probably pick the same way. Yeah, I'll pick the same way on fight night if and when it does happen, if they do get the fight back, because I think Rozenstruik can win. I think it can be anybody's fight, but at the same, and I wouldn't be surprised if the betting odds are pretty close, but and that could even be a pick'em fight. I don't know. Or I could see Francis being like a slight favorite, but I think the odds would be close. Rozenstruik can win, and it would be interesting to see Francis get stopped by somebody else or get knocked out by somebody else for once. But I think Rozenstruik being the way he comes forward and the way he's kind of confident when he fights, I think that will get him caught. Him being overly aggressive versus a guy like that, I think he might be. it'll be exciting to see him do it at first, but I think his style will get him caught versus Francis, and he'll get put away pretty bad.
So I'm a lone wolf on this one.
and then after that, I think we'll probably see Rozenstruik and Derek Lewis fight shortly after that down the line. That might even be the next fight after that. I could see, because I think that one's a good one for us to talk about on this show. I think Lee would be all in on that fight.
I don't think the UFC would do that. I think they would want to probably put him in. Probably against maybe a top 10 heavyweight, not a top five heavyweight, just to get, like Evan said, get the hype train back on the rails. So I think they will put him in against Nagano and then have him go in against Lewis. I think they'll probably have him fight another guy that's probably a little bit lower in the rankings. Because that's the same thing they just did with Johnny Walker. If you see Johnny Walker fought Corey Anderson and lost, and then they tried to get him, they tried to pit him against Krylov, and Krylov was, I know he's ranked in the top 10 or the top 15, I think, and basically they wanted to get Johnny Walker back on the winning track, but he ended up losing again. So basically, his hype train is going to be held up in the station for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Man, but anywho, this was we hit on pretty much so many different topics tonight, and it was good. We talked about Tom Brady, our Tom Brady leaving, or my Tom Brady leaving the New England Patriots. That was very heartbreaking news this week. We talked about the UFC pushing all their events back and whether we think Khabib Ferguson will happen. We talked about McGregor and Gaethje possibly happening for July. We talked about Masvidal Usman possibly happening for July. We talked about Ganu Rozenstruik. We talked about so many different things. We really didn't talk about the coronavirus, and I'm pretty happy about that, because the last show we spent like half the show talking about that, and that was fine, but It's nice, because it's all you hear about now, and this show has always been my escape from the everyday life, and it's nice to not hear about the things that I hear about in my everyday life, and just talk about UFC and things that I like on this show. So it was nice to get that break and not talk about that. And having Evan come on was absolutely fire, like it is always. And we all got to give our opinions on some different things, and that was fun too. So I'm happy about that. We definitely got to a lot of good stuff tonight. I'm very happy, very content with this show, definitely.
Well, with that being said, everybody take care of yourself. Make sure you take care of your family. Make sure you keep your social distance. Wash
Six
your hands.
Feet. Six
keep,
feet.
Keep your hands off your face.
Six
take
feet.
Care of yourself. This thing is for real. It's gonna be I know in China they say they haven't had any new cases in the place where it started at, Wuhan. They say they tore down their little standard hospitals. So hopefully it won't last long here. But in the meantime, you got to be vigilant and you got to be taking care of yourself. Everybody have a good weekend and be safe. Live, love, laugh. Live your life to the fullest. Tell somebody you love them and have one good laugh for every day. With that being said, Lee and Key signing off. Episode 132 with special guest Evan back in the house with us. Everybody be good, man. Peace.